Kobe Bryant tears his Achilles, someone had to ask him, is this the last we've seen of Kobe Bryant on the floor? Will we ever see you play basketball again? And he didn't like that question. Who wants to ask that? His eyes were red from crying, you know, but as a reporter, that's my job, is to ask difficult questions. And what I asked the doc wasn't especially difficult. It was just, I had some issues when I watched the last few possessions. I didn't like the lineup that he had. He had Luke Mahamute on the bench, and they were getting killed by Joe Johnson. And Jamal Crawford, who I am extremely fond of as a person, is not a very good defender, especially against Joe Johnson. So
a fatally bad defender.
Yeah, and so you can assume that Quinn Snyder is going to call timeout if you make it. But, you know, I didn't assume that. I was the last thing I would do if I'm the coach in that moment, if it's a tie game and they don't have the right defensive lineup on, I'm not going to call timeout to draw up a play so they can put better defenders in and stop me when our guys should know how to play basketball together. They should be able to, with that amount of time, go out there and find the mismatch or just go to Joe and get a shot. And they did. So I you either wait and get your shot up with 5 seconds left, which Kobe Bryant, I grew up on this beat watching the Lakers in every game, basically. Kobe would do it all the time. So it's just second nature to assume that someone's going to burn the clock down to a certain point and go for the win or the loss or the tie or whatever. But fine, I get it. The doc didn't want to do it. It's all good. Everyone's got their style. I just, if you're going to go early, make sure you have your lineup that can also defend. If you're going to hold it and go late, then you could have Jamal out there, because then if you make it, they're going to call timeout because they're going to have to set up a play. You don't want to just rush down and, four, and you know, by, shoot at five, you get the ball around three-something. You need to call a timeout so you can just get your guys down court and advance the ball. So then you could sub in Mahamute. So there's just a – I just was – it's a basketball question. And I you mentioned Larry Kuhn. I do a podcast once a month on Basketball Insiders. We have podcasts there twice a week, but – the one that I do is monthly with Larry. And Larry said, you know, analytically, it's a very good question. He'd love to see a simulation where you go and look at all the stats of this situation, and you could argue that with that X amount of time versus 12 seconds versus 4 seconds or whatever, that a team's going to have a harder time scoring. So it's all good. Doc was in a bad mood. I asked him a difficult question that maybe he wasn't prepared for. Maybe I didn't ask it in a way. Maybe I didn't ask it right. I don't know. Or maybe it didn't even matter, you know. But it kind of blew up, though, didn't it, there?
Yeah, no, it did. It was a bit of a meme. I want to get James. James, I want to get your take on this. And then I have a zeitgeist thing. I've got a concept, a theory, a bit of a conspiracy here why it shook Doc so much. But, I mean, do you have anything immediately that you – I mean, how do you react to all that?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that where Eric's coming from. It's just like, we know Doc's kind of an old school coach, and you know, I've seen it both ways, right? You want to just get two when you can get two, or score when you can score, and you know, you want to attack the defense and give yourself a little time, I guess, to hit the boards, and you know, I guess after you score, the more time, the better. So I guess it's easy in hindsight, you know, hindsight 2020, so it's easy to kind of question his decision, and you know, so. It was a good question, and I, you know, it sparked the conversation, and it did turn into a meme. But at the same time, I think we talked about this, me and you, Chris, where it's almost like where we hyper-analyze everything from our perspective as and fans, and it's just not like that for a coach. I mean, this is his livelihood. So.
Oh man, I'm about to do some hyper-analyzing. I'm about to get inside.
That's what you do. This is what you do. You're annoyingly hyper-analyzing. So. So yeah, you know, from the coach's perspective, it's almost like I can almost imagine him being like, how dare this guy, you know, question my decision making and play the Monday morning quarterback. So,
well, okay, all right, I gotta give my thought here, my 2 cents that I've been teasing for the listener for a little while here. So what I think might have happened, diagnosing the mind of Doc, which is a little bit funny to me, but it's not that funny. I think what happened is that old school is something that's thrown around a lot with Doc Rivers, sometimes as a compliment, sometimes not as super nice. And I wouldn't want to get Eric's real opinion on this. I don't want to put him on the spot because of his relationship with Doc Rivers, but one thing that I think might have happened is that he might have just not considered that as a possibility. Whether that was after thinking a little bit more about Quinn Snyder and the way that he likes to run the Jazz. I think that a lot of the times, if Derek Favors was out there, if Rudy Gobert was out there, that Quinn Snyder probably would call a timeout. But maybe because of underestimating, or maybe because of just not thinking about it, despite in the modern NBA, like, yeah, you don't use the timeout. You push the tempo. You try to get down the court in 8 seconds and get a mismatch like the one that they got with Joe Johnson over Crawford. And I think that in a half-court mindset like the one that Doc has, you potentially just don't zero in on that possibility as much. And then that's the reason why Jordan Crawford was in the game. So I'm not sure how far you want to go with that, Eric.
I've had post-game questions of Doc where I've said to him, like in a game where there was one of those moments where they were up three, and it was the end game situation, and the other team hits the three. So I was I asked him, like, where are you on that as far as when do you foul? Do you foul? At what point? And it ends up he actually wanted his guys to foul, and I think they fouled earlier. So it was, I'm trying to remember. It was like one of those weird situations. But I just wanted to get, like, what's your philosophy as a coach on that? And he gave me his philosophy, and it wasn't a big deal. And so I've had similar kind of questions, not just with him, but coaches in general, because that's one of the things I try to do is better understand the game. I like to put myself in the shoes of a reader or a fan or a listener or whatever it is who loves basketball, hyperanalyzes things, and wants to understand why coaches do the things they do. And it's not to say that the coach did it wrong or right. I just want, what's your take on this? Because every coach, you ask 30 coaches about something, you're going to get 30 different takes. They're going to be slightly different. They're not going to be identical.
Well, so here was my implication. I was basically saying that Doc Rivers was frustrated because he didn't realize that that was going to happen or expected otherwise, and he projected that frustration onto you. That's the conspiracy.
I can simply write it off as he, in the moment, he was upset, whether he was upset with me or some, that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, look, I have a great relationship with my wife.
Yeah,
I know. Right? Married since 2000. Sometimes she gets really upset over something that I can't fathom why. And then you have a talk and you realize, you know, gosh, there was something going on because of that, you know, that lady, the other mother at school who was real bitchy to her. And, she, you know what I mean? It's like sometimes.
It sounds like James and I, honestly.
Look, everyone does that a little bit. You vent on someone that you probably shouldn't have. It just so happened this was very much in the public eye. And apparently, you know, moments later, Charles Barkley is calling me an idiot, which, you know, is kind of like a badge, to be honest. I'm fine with that.
That's a compliment in my mind.
Look, I love Charles Barkley for what he's been. I don't agree with a big portion of his analysis, but equally I enjoy it. So, look, this is a fun – we're in this, as far as I'm concerned, because we love basketball. If you're covering the sport or involved with the sport and you don't love basketball, then you should probably do something else. But I think by and large, almost everybody I come in contact with has some level of love and or love hate. You can love hate it. That's fine, too, because, you know, I'm sure Doc Rivers is hating basketball tonight. It's just frustrating for me, for the Clippers, rather, you know, to see them go down again without a fight because of injury. And it kind of goes to show that when you have those opportunities, which the Clippers had two prime opportunities against the Thunder, against the Rockets, that you have to take advantage of them. You can't shoot yourself in the foot because you just don't know when you're going to get that chance again. Here, they're robbed of a chance with Blake with his toe. Last year, they lost Chris and Blake in the same quarter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
really quick.
James, okay, so we were talking a little bit about this before we went on air. I mean, especially in this series, and I understand that argument a little bit better, being robbed by circumstance. Certainly last year, and then in the Rockets series, I think ultimately, I mean, they gave it away, nah, but like no, Josh, there's Josh no Smith hitting those. Okay, okay, yeah, you're right.
There's no excuse for Rocket Series. So that's just.
So what you were saying to me is that, you know, this Clippers team keeps doing this, and it's because you sent something joyless about the way that they play basketball, and Eric was at the game, so I wanted to get his opinion on basically your overall take on the Clippers, sort of, and how it was crystallized by tonight's performance and just sort of the series. So I think your opinion, I think, is a little bit scathing.
Well, all right, Eric. So what I was saying is I saw this in OKC. I saw this in Indiana this year. I know basketball's not about fun, right? It's not necessarily about fun. Sure, we love to watch it and overall, but you know, we know teams have hated each other and they've went far in the playoffs and they've won championships, or they've not really liked each other and they've won championships together. It's fine, but you can tell, like, Golden State played with a certain, you know, it sounds kind of silly. They play with a certain joy, and I just,
hey, that's Luke Walton's word right there. That's Luke Walton, right, straight out of Golden State.
I could be totally wrong, but just from watching the Clippers this year, they just don't seem to. It's one thing to be businesslike, but even when they're out running and, you know, DeAndre gets a dunk, there's just no kind of the energy around the team just doesn't seem. And like, even when they, you know, they're struggling a little bit, and I've seen people say, hey, if you watch these guys walk off the court, I was listening to, I think it might have been somebody on Zach Lowe or on the Ringer pod, whatever. You guys watch these guys walk off the court and they don't like each other. You can just get this interactions the way they are together. You just don't like each other. And I just feel that. And I felt that in OKC last year. I actually wrote about it for B-Ball Breakdown. And, you know, people were like, oh, well, you're just projecting. But, and you just kind of feel guys, not that they don't like playing, they just don't play like that in the Clipperland anymore. And I think that really matters as far as when it comes down to the crunch time and things get really tight. You can tell, well, like, Utah seemed to really enjoy playing together. They moved that ball, make or miss, they don't care. They went that long stretch tonight where they missed a lot of shots. And Rodney Hood was 4 for 13. He's still pulling up with confidence. George Hill didn't have a great night. He still hit the corner three late. I mean, you can just tell these guys just really believe in each other and what they're doing. And I don't get that feeling from the Clippers.
Well, they're young. You know how it is, young love. They're having fun in Utah. But no, seriously, the Clippers are like an old married couple, and not in my case, you know, if my wife is listening, that's not how I feel in any way. But no, she's out. She's knocked out asleep. But
oh man, not okay. Okay, all no, right. She's asleep.
She's sleeping right now. She's not here listening to the show. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
No, but the Clippers are like that married couple that has that just it's they're in a rut. You know what I mean? They're you come together and there's this potential and this promise of what you can be and what you will be. And you start out, you get to the playoffs, you go against the Spurs when you're a bunch of babies, right? You're newlyweds. This is Chris and Blake together. And yeah, you get beat, but then you come back and you beat the Grizzlies and you get to the next round and it looks like you might do something, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, Blake twists his ankle and all that. So, and then you get further and then you choke and then you choke again and then you get injured. So that's really the story of the Clippers. It's like they're, you know, DeAndre wanted to leave for a minute, then he didn't. I think that DeAndre and Blake are still quite close. I don't think that anybody loves and has a great joy playing with Chris Paul, and that is not necessarily a criticism. There were some people who had a challenge playing with Kobe Bryant.
Right, Muse Cage.
Chris is a little dictator, and I think he's one of the best. I don't look at Chris this series and say, oh, he's not coming through. Chris is coming through. He's doing it by himself. He's playing great. Someone sent me, and I have no idea if the numbers are accurate, but like his usage and true shooting percentages are ridiculous in the fourth quarter in this series. And if I'm not even going to quote them because I can't verify them, but just by the eye test, it certainly seems like he's doing the right thing. He's playing hard. But you know, it just feels like this team's chemistry is fried, and that it's time for a change. And I do a lot of radio, do a lot of different outlets across the country, and they ask me, you know, what's next for the Clippers. I mean, I could see Blake leaving this. I could see him saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I could see
sticking with the whole
sticking around.
Sticking with the whole. Hey, guys, do you remember a couple years ago? The summer of 2014, Doc Rivers raised the same point you raised now, and he said, rosters get stale. He said, you can get to the point where you just kind of reach the expiration point, and we're really close to that. And this was 2 years ago. He's saying exactly the same thing that you're saying now.
You know what I mean? That's crazy. That love and feeling.
Well, I mean, DeAndre, it's kind of like they separated, you know, like they had a trial separation. It lasted about a few days, and then DeAndre
came. Love this. I love this metaphor. We've got extended metaphor. It's great.
Yeah, it's the truth. And like, I look at Chris Paul and what he did in the negotiation of the collective bargaining agreement, which is really like my so-called area of expertise. But they changed the you know, he's the president of the union, the primary negotiator, along with LeBron James. Yeah, and they changed the rule called the 36 rule is now the 38 rule, which basically enables older players to get paid bigger, longer contracts, which is great. I mean, whatever. I'm fine with that. I mean, there were some snickers from a few people in the industry that I've spoken to about, yeah, like, you know, it's not shocking that that rule changed, but whatever, it's cool. I mean, the new CBA is, I'm glad they didn't go on a lockout. I have nothing against Chris Paul for, you know, he helped get a deal done. So, excellent. Thank you. I don't want to be out of work like the rest of us when there's a lockout. It stinks. But I could see him re-signing for 5 years with the Clippers because they kind of have to pay him. They kind of have to keep him to stay relevant. They can go out and try to trade for, like, Carmelo, and Blake might leave, and then you have, like, Carmelo and Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and figure out the rest from there. I could see that happening. But, I, you know, I spoke to someone in Chicago today with the Bulls, and I was like, you know, I wonder what if you guys can, you know, if you guys can work the numbers, you might be able to get Wade to call up Chris Paul and say, hey, come play with me and Jimmy Butler, you know, Robin Lopez and, say, Bobby Portis or whoever. That's a pretty nice starting five right there. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. I don't know that that happens. I think Chris takes the money to stay in L.A., but I also don't not know that it happens. I could see that happening. And the guy was like, hey, you know, please, we'd love to have Chris.
James?
I just also want to say I'm looking up the numbers right now, and he's absolutely right. In the fourth quarter, Chris Paul has a usage of – his usage is up there 42%, right below James Harden. They're seventh in the NBA, right below James Harden's 44%. And his true shooting percentage is – you got to take a guess. What's his true shooting percentage in the fourth quarter of these games?
In the playoffs?
I'll let Chris guess.
Wait, Eric, what'd you say?
I'll let Chris guess because I kind of have an idea because someone sent it to me. I didn't memorize the number. I don't know if it's accurate. I'll let Chris guess first.
Are you talking in the playoffs or the regular season?
Playoffs, Chris. Okay. Keep up, buddy.
Are we clutch? Or, no, fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
Just
fourth
okay. Crap, dude. All right, true shooting. Let's see.
Don't be looking it up.
How about 50?
Okay, that's
like
nice.
70,
that's,
right?
Yeah, 50 is like it's subpar. I don't know why
you like
do that.
74 or something like that.
70, I don't know. Well, I felt like you were
71.3%.
Okay, look. Okay, here's what I thought was happening. I thought you were pulling some sneaky stuff on me because it looked to me like it's been great. But I thought maybe like in the first 2 minutes he's whiffed on 500 shots while I was putting popcorn in the microwave, and it was just going to be like,
you're,
gotcha.
You're the only sneaky one here, buddy. I'm yeah. straight arrow.
Eric, did you just say
Paul
yes?
Is balling
to
out.
Sneaky?
He's balling out. He just
way,
doesn't
I
have.
Guess. I guess whatever. And that's my thing with him, dude. I get it. And I get the fascination with him. I get even like I think he's averaging 26, 27 points a game, which that's amazing. But then we got guys like LeBron who can, you know, 32 is, you know, he falls out of bed and scores 32 in the playoffs in the first round. You know, I think Russ averaged almost 38 points a game with zero help, really no help. I mean, that's pretty ugly. You know, his whole net on-off thing was ridiculous.
Well, so Chris Paul isn't LeBron. Like, that's not.
I understand. But, I mean, it's when we're talking upper echelon, top five, top ten kind of players, there's a certain and I understand it, he's just not built like that. He's not gonna take 25, 30 shots a game. You know, right now I think he's taking a little under 20 a game in the playoffs, and that's the problem because he's such a ball dominant guy. And you need a guy who can just kind of generate offense, and he's good at it, and very efficient at it. But I mean, there seems to be a cap on what he can really do. And
yeah, I feel like what's missing. Yeah, every team's gonna have lulls, but the Clippers just can't deal with Joe Johnson. It's just they're this close to sweeping. Really.
Yeah, but like, God, I mean, this time it's Joe Johnson, but before it was Josh Smith. I mean, Joe Johnson's better than Josh Smith, but he's still past his ex. Well, you know,
and it was freaking Corey Brewer too. Either they've had trouble with rangy, athletic, or stronger wing players, and that's where they are. They tried to get Wesley Johnson. They overpaid him this summer, and he hasn't been able to contribute. So they got Paul Pierce, who's long in the tooth and is doing his best and actually playing pretty decently in this series. Gosh, I mean,
and Luka Bonmute,
Reece Spates,
forward.
But that I don't know why they tried that.
Spates just kind of he dropped a load off in his diapers today. He was mad.
he's a good backup center on this team. He should not be playing any power forward.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so one thing, going back to where we were talking earlier, I might be misremembering, but on a recent podcast with Larry Kuhn, didn't you name that rule after Chris Paul? Like, wasn't it the Chris Paul rule, the 38 thing?
Did we name it after Chris Paul? We probably did. I'd have to check.
Something of note there.
I've seen it called that.
Yeah. Well, and you know where that originated? On a podcast that is not on the network, but is still great, Basketball Insiders. So, I want to stick with this marriage metaphor. I think it's great. I think it gets a little bit touch and go when you start to talk about Blake Griffin's relationship with that trainer. I probably, if we ever talk about that, I want to move away from it. But the idea that Blake Griffin would sort of hop in the Corvette and peel off and take, you know, the kids and visitation and all of that, it seems to me, and I was thinking about this before I recorded this podcast that got on Dash Radio, Force of Habit. So it seems to me like it makes sense that he would go to the Lakers. And I think that if you're Steve Ballmer, you've got to realize that that's probably the case, because it's like the Lakers are doing all this stuff with Magic Johnson.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. Who do you think's going to go to the Lakers?
I think Griffin's going to go to the girl next door.
Right.
Come on, dude.
Right.
Dude, the girl next door is prepubescent. There's not going to happen.
Hey.
Well, no, what about Paul George?
Hold on. In real life, guys step out with some unattractive girls next door just because they're next door and the proximity. Sometimes proximity matters.
Well, right.
But in this case, the girl next door is still like living at home and she's in junior college.
Maybe
and,
so, but he doesn't have to move. He's got two kids. He's got his thing.
His life is just in a different place. So if he'd maybe have a summer fling with that young lady, but
this is a guy who wants to do comedy. He likes to do, you know,
he's
going to
stay in L.A., right? I mean, that's like
I would bet. What's our bet, guys?
I don't expect him to join the Lakers, but I don't cross it off as a possibility at all. I think it's a real possibility.
Blake Griffin's not going to the Lakers. Neither is Paul George.
Here's my thinking. So one second, Eric, and I want to get your input on this as an insider. So I guess what I was saying is, yes, I don't expect that he's going to leave. I think that what is going to happen is that Steve Ballmer is going to look at the possibility that Blake would go to the Lakers, and maybe it would be okay if you make the whole Chandler Parsons call, where it's like, I don't want to be the guy who signs this, you know, ticking time bomb, right? So if Blake Griffin went to, you know, the East Coast or something, and they were fairly confident that his injuries were going to be career ending, then maybe that would be okay. But if Steve Ballmer lets Blake Griffin walk and doesn't put a 5-year max contract on the table, I think that if you're Steve Ballmer, you've got to realize and think to yourself that, okay, Blake Griffin wants to stay in LA. And if he's not going to do it on the Clippers, then I don't want to let him get in a room with Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. What do you think about that? I mean, I think that he's not going to leave the Clippers, but I think that the Lakers seems to me like the second most likely thing.
Well, there's a lot of math I need to run that I'm trying to figure out how the Lakers could get Blake and Paul George. It's not easy and not easily doable, but not impossible either. The basic numbers don't work. I've got something written for Bleacher Report that is, I assume, on the schedule. I wrote it today, and I just kind of broke down the Lakers' path to Paul George and, you know, looked at it economically. So the idea is that Paul George is going to leave potentially in a year's time, but we won't know that whether, you know, we need to know, does he get to an all NBA first, second, or third team? Because if he is, he'll be eligible for about an extra $30-35 million. So I think he signs if he's eligible in Indiana, even if he's not happy with it, for that kind of money. But if he doesn't get that honor, then it's that same kind of Blake Griffin situation, right? It's the Dwight Howard question, right? Dwight Howard left the Lakers for a shorter contract to go be happy, right? Now, of course, he wasn't going to be happy in Houston, but he didn't know that at the time. but he signed for 4 years, and I think I have to check. Was it 4 years in Houston? Whatever it was, he left a year off his contract. Lakers could have paid him that fifth year. He didn't get it. But then he signed down the road. He signed with the Atlanta Hawks and made up whatever money that he lost, he made later. So in the case of Blake Griffin, in the case of Paul George, for them to leave, they have to leave somewhere in the neighborhood of $40-something million on the table. But they're going to make up a major portion of that down the road on their next contract. So unless, as you mentioned, you know, if Blake is actually hurt to the point where, like, he's Chandler Parsons, damaged goods, then, yeah, you sign the biggest deal you can, which means you sign 5 years with Ballmer. But that's only if you're hurt. If you're Blake Griffin and you're like, oh, I know it's over. I know I'm not the same. I know I'm not going to get paid in 4 years. I'm going to go sign for five right now. I'm going to stay with the Clippers. I don't care if I love Chris Paul or not. I'm going to do this. But if that's not the case, then that extra year, there's nothing Ballmer can do. It's like if Blake Griffin's like, I'm good, I'm going to bounce back. I'm going to earn my next this is not my last contract. I'm going to make up everything. Same with Paul George. Yeah, I mean, if he gets this All-NBA first team and gets a Supermax, then it's a little different. But if he doesn't, then it makes sense for him to go somewhere else and make up that deal on his next contract, make up that extra year. And then there's nothing that the Pacers can do about it. There's nothing that the Clippers can do about it. So in the case of the Clippers, they should have traded Blake, and I said this at the time, in June of last year. If they once they waited to July, it killed their economic incentive to make any trade. It killed any possible trade. In the case of Paul, they need to get a deal done before you wait too long. Who's going to pay for Paul George for 3 months when he, through his agent or through the media, put it out there that that he wants to go join the Lakers anyway?
James,
I mean, and that's where we are now in the world of NBA, right? You don't let guys get to end their deals without having some kind of security. So, I don't know. I know that the word's been out about Paul George going to the Lakers. I can't see it from the timeline of that team.
Yeah, but don't go tied to the timeline.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Where were the Cavs 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think they're going to deviate. I think that's the plan. They're cleaning house.
Dump them. You can dump every one of those kids. Now, they love Brandon Ingram. They ain't not dumping him.
I don't know. For Paul George. You
don't like point guard D'Angelo Russell. You don't think there are teams that would love to have a D'Angelo Russell? You know, yeah. Are you going to get a superstar? But if you get Paul George for, and this is what I wrote about on Bleacher, which isn't live yet. There's a line where if you're the Lakers, it's worth it to go trade for him now, because you have him,
right?
And then you can, yeah. There's a line where it's better not to give up that much.
You got to put a ring on it.
In free agency and wait. Where's that line, right? Is the line Clarkson and Nance right now? If you're, I do Clarkson and Nance for Paul George. I think, yeah. But if the
yeah, of course, yeah.
That's
easy. Yeah. The price is the number 1, 2, 3 pick, assuming they have it, and Russell and Ingram. I think most people would say, no, that's way too rich. Wait a year. Get Paul George. And if he doesn't come, oh, well. But that's not the path if that's the only, you know. So somewhere between those two lines is where the Pacers will make a deal and the Lakers will make a deal. But it's not in a vacuum, because there's also a bunch of lines for the Celtics and any other suitors who wants to, you know, get to the table, who aren't afraid of Paul George leaving in a year's time to the Lakers anyway. So it's not just a binary. It's not Lakers or nothing. It's Lakers or Celtics or whoever else. And so we just got to, you know, write about it, talk about it, and see what happens.
Well, so here's my thinking, right? If you are the Lakers and you sign Blake Griffin, and this is what I hope that Ballmer is considering as nightmare scenario. If you're the Lakers and you sign Blake Griffin, then Paul George starts to apply some pressure to the front office, starts to leak a little bit more that he only wants to go to the Lakers, and basically hope that they don't have to wait that full year. And basically the reason why they would have to is because they trade him to the wrong place. Basically, the Nuggets come in and say, hey, we want to take a flyer on Paul George. Or the Celtics come in and they're like, hey, Paul, you're going to wear green now. And, I mean, I think it's a good calculation on their part to at least, I mean, if you're not giving up too many assets, to at least get Paul George and try to convince him through success or through whatever, or, you know, through culture if you're the Miami Heat. I think that's, you know, something that you can reasonably do, and it's things that teams have done in the past, including the Pelicans. But I think that if you go to the Lakers, if the Lakers make the best offer, and I don't know, I've thought about Julius Randle a lot on the Pacers, and I think that he's a really good front court mate for Miles Turner. But, you know, all that stuff aside, so if the Lakers make the most compelling trade, then you have Blake Griffin and Paul George, and you can, I mean, what, like, you can stretch Mozgov, right? You can stretch Luol Deng, and I'm pretty sure that means
much bad money.
Yeah, man.
I can't get over how much bad money that is.
Yeah, but that's...
They can really get NBA 2K, right? I mean, they can really just go nuts.
Well, here's the way that the math would work is that you would have to open up enough cap room to sign Blake Griffin to the tune of somewhere around $30 million, okay? They're not there yet. They're at about 28, and that's best case, and that's actually worst case. That's assuming they don't get their first-round pick. And that assumes Nick Young opts out. I think Nick Young will opt out. And then they have to cut Tarik Black, who they are, all as far as I could tell, are fond of. And I'm fond of Tarik Black. He's one of my favorite guys in the league. As far as the guy's like my spirit animal. The guy is like, I listen to his audio just to feel like I need to get out of bed. If I'm stuck in bed, I listen to him. Let's go get the day. Let's go attack the day. Anyway, let's say they get to 28 million. They have no pick. They have to deal somebody, and it's not. It'd probably be or stretch somebody, Corey Brewer or Mozgov or Deng. At some point, you don't stretch those guys unless you really need the space. But you get enough space to go and sign Blake Griffin. Now you've got Blake Griffin. Now you're back over the cap. Now you make a trade that's cap worthy, that brings on, Paul George. Now the challenge there is, you know, sending out enough money to do so, and the rules have changed a little bit, but they probably have to send out $14.5 million in salary. Just looking at the numbers, that's easy to do with Clarkson and
Randall. Really, right? Could you do Clarkson,
yeah,
Randall?
Yeah, you want to go Randall and Clarkson? Randall's $4 million. Clarkson's 11. Rather, he's 11-12. That makes it 15-16. That works right there. Clarkson, Randall. Now you've got Paul George, you've got Brandon Ingram, you've got Blake Griffin, and you still have Larry Nance, and you still have D'Angelo Russell. And
so are we talking Clarkson?
Maybe the first round pick.
Clarkson, well, I guess, and Randall and the pick?
I'm maybe. Not saying Clarkson and the pick. I'm not including the pick.
Well,
Clarkson and Randall.
So, I mean, but you would, though, right? I mean, I probably would. I mean,
I don't know what...
If it's the number one pick, no.
Here's something to keep in mind. Most star players are traded for pennies on the dollar. They're just, no one's traded for value. They're just not. It just doesn't happen. It happens every once in a while where a team, like, screws up or they don't realize how much they're trading. Like, for instance, the Knicks gave up, you know, the whole kit and caboodle for Carmelo Anthony, and the Nets gave up basically the
Pelicans. Pelicans gave up the next Steph Curry, right?
No, the Pelicans. Eric, the Pelicans just prove exactly what you're saying. Yeah, we know. We know how you feel about Boogie.
I totally interrupted you. My bad.
Went pennies. You go down the list.
Yeah.
Dating back to Pau Gasol, and who knew that Marc Gasol is what he was, right? At the time, people didn't even know Marc Gasol was in the deal and who the hell he was. So more often than not, the players and their agents hold the teams over a barrel when you get to this point. That's why, you know, as you said, James, that, like, guys don't finish out their – it's hard at the end of their contracts. You got to have a guy under contract for a long period of time. You got to get him locked down. And if you don't
– Hey, Eric, I got a question for you. Sorry. This a little bit off, a little off topic. Did – and this is a quick one on the same thing we're talking. Did OKC make a mistake not moving Kevin Durant? I mean, obviously we know now that, you know, but
when you're in a position like that, where there is no value in return, like you can't, there is no equal value. There's nowhere close to value.
Right.
There was nothing that they could get back that in any way approximates what they lost. When you have a guy who's basically saying all the right things, doing all the right things, who you believe in, who is giving you all the indication that he's going to stay.
Well, and there's the Kevin Durant rule now. So if he had turned down a 5-year extension, you know, before, I mean, he wasn't incentivized to resign, right? I mean, he was incentivized to go into free agency.
Right.
So
honestly, the union screwed this. The players' union is why
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant is in Golden State.
Yeah. So
they had the opportunity to accept what's called cap smoothing, which is where the NBA proposed and said, all right, the cap's going to go up a crazy, crazy amount, right? It's going to go up and end up going up $24 million.
They want to do it incrementally, right?
We're going to artificially lower it. And so because everybody was a free agent this last summer got paid, right? They benefited, but everybody else didn't. Like, so Steph Curry didn't benefit. Right. What did Steph Curry get? He got nada. OK, he got a rich teammate. You know, it didn't help him. He didn't get the money. So the NBA is like, we'll set the amount of and there'll be a huge shortfall. Right. You guys won't spend what you're supposed to. The teams, rather, they won't spend anywhere close. So we'll cut a check. We'll cut a check for the difference. We'll give it to the union and you give it to your entire base. Everybody gets money. It's like Oprah. Everyone gets a million. Everyone gets 10 million. Whatever. Everyone gets a ton of money.
I didn't know that's how they're going to do it.
Okay.
And
this is why we have Eric Pincus on.
Michelle Roberts had just taken the job. From talking to people, she hadn't fully been really briefed to the point where she fully understood the ramifications. The players, I don't think, fully understand the ramifications, and they missed an opportunity. And so because of that, they said no. And in saying no, the cap went up ridiculous amount, and now Bismack Biyombo and Timofey Mozgov and even Evan Fournier and who else got overpaid just to the point of absurdity.
Did you say Evan Turner yet?
Yeah, Evan Turner and Solomon Hill, you know, even Solomon Hill's not that bad.
Everyone on the Blazers, pretty much. Right. Oh, Tyler Johnson, there's a good one.
Tyler Johnson, and you know, not that I'm saying that these guys are bad players. I'm just saying everybody was paid the wrong amounts. And the system's self-correcting, and now we have a new CBA that's going to correct it even more. There, you know, the most recent podcast I did the other day with Larry Kuhn, we basically came up with that. Yeah, there's going to be some teams that still more teams are still going to have the money than there are good free agents that are worth it. So there will probably be 3 or 4 or 5, maybe more guys who get bad contracts, but it's not going to be like it was this last year.
Yeah, that's my impression. So do you think that Paul George, do you think that Paul George would be more likely to apply a little bit of pressure to Larry Bird and Indiana management if they signed Blake Griffin first? And by they, I mean the Lakers. So if the Lakers have Blake Griffin, do you think it might be one of those things where it's sort of like, okay, well now you have another superstar, let's go ahead and activate the plan? Because I think that what might happen there is that the Lakers would realize that they would have to trade for Paul George because, you know, they would be over the cap pretty much. So,
well, let me throw a little wrinkle in here.
Please.
I believe that D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, and Paul George all have the same agent.
Ooh. Oh, man.
So
let's see.
So let me take a look at that. Let me double check that. Paul George agent. Make sure I'm right. I know that I'm mostly right, and I may be absolutely right.
I'm all about, crazy speculation. You're right whether you're right or not. I'm fine fake basketball
I'm
news.
I'm looking it up as we speak. The thing is that agents hold a lot of power, and a lot of this stuff is negotiated early. You know, I was fond of Mitch Kupchak as, you know, spending a long time with him through the years, but he ran things pretty well by the book. And in this day and age, I remember talking to him about Beno Udrih, who was bought out by the Heat. He just gave away money for no reason, basically. He was hurt, and it was ridiculous. Like, it made no sense, right?
Culture.
But he did it. And then I'm like, watch, next year, and which is this past year, Oudrey is going to sign a minimum deal with the Heat, guaranteed. And that's what I told Kupchak, and that's what happened. And he said to me something along the lines of, but that's not legal. I'm like, it's like, why does the league let them get away with it? I'm like, I don't know how to answer that. Like, the thing is like, you need, it's like basketball on the court, right? Like, you do a bunch of stuff and it's all legal until the ref calls a foul, right? Until you got to get dinged a little bit. Now, you know, obviously you don't want to be like Kevin McHale and have a contract, you know, legal contract in writing. But Aaron Mintz, I'm looking at Real GM for the credit here, but Aaron Mintz, CAA Sports, he's the agent of D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, and Mr. Paul George. So,
nice.
Yeah. So these things matter. So now it's up to them. Now it's up to someone like Aaron Mintz. A lot of times players want to be together. They're like family. They have a brotherhood. Certainly Palinka's clients were like that. You've got Trevor Ariza. You've got Eric Gordon. You've got James Harden. When the Lakers needed some help for Kobe Bryant, not that it was help, but they got Carlos Boozer via amnesty claim. I wonder how much Palinka could have helped in that, making sure that amnesty went through. I don't know. That's maybe had nothing to do with that. But Ed Davis at the time, Chris Kaman at the time, there's one more, Wesley Johnson at the time. I think they've all left Palinka, and now Palinka's left all his clients. So there's a history of that. But you could also argue that maybe a client wants to not have, you know, maybe an agent doesn't want all his guys in one place to kind of share the stardom. I've heard people theorize that. I wonder if Randle would be in that trade to Indiana simply because maybe his agent wants his clients together to go have success together. Who knows?
So, okay, I want to get your take on this, James, because I think that I disagree with you, and I want to see what Eric has to say. So I think what you said before we started talking, that if the Lakers were to go out and get Paul George and Blake Griffin and then basically have their hands tied, you know, where do you go from there? I mean, make your argument for that, because I think that, you know,
I mean, that's a great core, because I think Paul George is on the cusp of top 10, and Blake Griffin was like a top 10 type kind of guy, except the last couple of years and the injuries. So, I mean, that's not bad, but I mean, you're still living in the age of the Warriors. Obviously, I think that's a good team. And, you know, then like, I guess how good do you think D'Angelo Russell is going to be? You know, how good is Brandon Ingram going to be? What's your path forward from there to add more talent? You know,
I mean, my argument is, how good could Blake Griffin be if he was in a system that more liberated him, and also if he was healthy?
I think we do agree there, because I've been beating that drum for a while that one of the issues with the Clippers is Chris Paul is too bald. It's such a micromanager that it doesn't give Blake Griffin enough room to play make and really blossom and be the best player he can be. So So my question though is do we have the same Blake Griffin from 2014 when he finished third in MVP voting?
Assume that Blake is healthy, right? Because if he's not healthy, we're just assuming that this is a minor setback. I don't think he's ever going to be the dunker that he used to be. I just don't think that's him anymore. But I remember early on in his career when everyone just thought he was a dunker, and he got his career high against the Pacers. It was like 40-something. And he had one dunk in that game. And I was like, you know, y'all missing out here. This guy is not just dunking the ball. This is a really good basketball player. Because people back then, I think that they just didn't understand who the Clippers were and who Blake Griffin is. It's like, you know, understandably, they were not on the map at all. And now people kind of have an idea of what Blake is, but we're wondering if he's ever going to be the same. But let's assume he is the same. And now you've got Blake Griffin, you've got Paul George. So what you've got is you've got two dynamic wing players. One's really good defensively, the other one is not. But you've got Brandon Ingram, I would imagine, as your sixth man at forward at either position, maybe a little guard. You've got D'Angelo Russell, and who knows where Julius Randle, what you had to trade, maybe Clarkson, whatever it is, what you had to trade. By my math, you had to trade Clarkson just to get that going, right?
Yeah.
But let's say you need that. You need someone good. Well, you have if D'Angelo Russell is not that, then you trade D'Angelo Russell and you get that. If Brandon Ingram is not that, you know, Ivica Zubac, the Houston Rockets 28th pick, the, you know, the little tiny moves, the good teams. Like, you look at what, I mean, look how quickly the Heat came together. Look how quickly the Cavs came together. How quickly the Warriors, they've got friggin' David West on a minimum contract. And Zaza Pachulia is like, okay.
Yeah, Eric, but see, I guess my thing with that is the connective tissue for the Cavs is LeBron James. The connective tissue for the Miami Heat was LeBron James, and the Warriors have Steph Curry. Yeah,
but okay, Blake Griffin, and Paul George, and
they're good.
Damn, Muse Cage. Kobe.
This is my problem. This is my problem when we do this. The same thing that, Dellavedova can work in Milwaukee because Giannis could be his LeBron. But Giannis is not LeBron, and that's why it didn't really doesn't really work that way.
No, so you got to remember, this is the Lakers have something that a lot of teams don't, is a huge platform. Like, players want to come to the Lakers. They just don't want to come to a bad Lakers team.
Right.
And right now,
yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
They've been bad for a while.
So Eric, you know, is the consummate Hollywood basketball genius. I mean, he hosts the very best podcast that covers Hollywood hoops. So good, in fact, that it is called Hollywood Hoops. So I think that...
Let me put on my hip waders right now. You're laying
shout out to my co-host Josh Martin of Bleach Report, also with Clippers.com. He's the best.
Oh, yeah.
What up, Josh?
He's also the best. Combined, we're ecstatic to have you on Almighty Baller Radio. But I, as someone who has a lot of insight into both teams, I'm excited personally by Blake Griffin's particular fit in Luke Walton's system. His system is a little bit unclear, but he was a rookie coach. Let's make the assumption that it's a little bit like the Warriors. So Blake Griffin, I think, could be awesome in that. And then Paul George, I think Paul George is kind of most deadly as a shooting guard. I mean, I could be insane, but maybe I sort of like Ingram as a sort of spidery guy, Andre Kirilenko-ish sort of defensive tool. I think that could work. I think it could be cool.
Like, if you rolled out, just real quick, D'Angelo Russell, Paul George at 2, Brandon Ingram at 3, Blake Griffin at 4, that's pretty interesting. Let's say the issue they have now is there's not enough playmaking, right? So you've got Julius Randle. When the original starting lineup, they had Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, and no one else who could make a pass. Nick Young, Lul Deng, and Timofey Mozgov, all subpar passers. You change that, and now you've got D'Angelo Russell. You've got Paul George, who's I don't know if he's like a 8-assist guy, but he's a better passer.
But he's sort of like Klay Thompson, you know? You can have one guy who's not a great passer. Well, I just mean, go ahead.
I'd have to look at Paul George's numbers as a passer. I haven't seen enough of – I haven't looked at that for a while.
Well, it would be okay.
When you put the ball in Paul George's hands, he's a very capable playmaker. He's not a LeBron James, and he's probably not even Kevin Durant, but he's a capable playmaker.
But Blake Griffin, though.
Blake Griffin is the playmaker, yes.
What I would like – well, and that's why I sort of said the Warriors. Like, you know, Steph Curry is a point guard, but really the point guard in that system – is Draymond Green a lot of the time. Steph plays off ball. I think D'Angelo, and I mean, I think a lot of the reason why people salivate over Lonzo Ball is sort of because they both make sense switching off ball handling. And I think one of the sneaky reasons that the Warriors work so well is because everyone on the court, except for Klay and except for Paul George in this hypothetical system, I mean, Blake Griffin is a great playmaker, I think. I think that it's going to be okay if Paul George is a guy who pretty much just shoots it when he has it. I'm all right with that.
Chris, can you do me a favor? Can you stop equating Paul George to Klay Thompson?
Well,
I mean is catch and shoot and defense. That's the similarity. But
that's not Paul George's game.
Yeah, I don't think that's Paul. I think Paul George. He's not a perfect fit as is for Walton, but that doesn't mean that he can't be. For one, he's had years where he's gone 4.1 assists. Per the season, you know, per game, and 3.5. So, and this last year, 3.3. So, I feel like there's a lot of ISOs and a lot of like hero ball that Paul George will go to, which is fine. Like he'll shoot mid-range shots. So there's a certain amount of adjustment that they would need. But that said, he's such a huge talent upgrade. I think they can make it work. But really, what you need is you need guys who are multi-positional. hybrids. Like, that's Walton wants hybrids, guys who can switch on defense, guys who can defend their man or switch, and he wants shooters. So I think Paul George pretty much fits that. And then you need a guy who can hit a money shot when you need a money shot. And if that's D'Angelo Russell, if that, I mean, if you still got Julius Randle in there, that's an, I don't know how it all fits together. I don't know what goes out to make that all happen.
It's like a Rubik's Cube.
It's a complex puzzle.
Hey, just want to let you guys know, in four games this season, this playoffs, Paul George averaged 7 assists a game.
There you go. So,
Well, and, you know, there's all sorts of thoughts. I mean, I like to think that probably the way to go, and I think most NBA brains, especially Jeannie Buss, I mean, based on some of her comments, you get the talent and then you sort it out. I mean, it at surface level, Dwayne Wade and LeBron aren't a perfect fit until they are. And you're sort of hoping, and I think that, Eric, you sort of mentioned this a little bit, is that they're so phenomenal that you somehow work it out. And I guess, you know, the vision that I have for Paul George is what he's decided to do and what he's ultimately not comfortable with. And he's actually griped a lot about it in Indiana, is like, do I have to do everything for this team? I mean, he's sort of said that that's something that he's not particularly happy about during the regular season. It's like, I didn't realize that this was going to be my role. So the change that I think he has thought that he needed to do was alter his game to do that hero ball stuff. And then the floor has been inadequately spread. And that means he takes a lot of pull-up mid-range jump shots. So, you know, for whatever reason, unfortunately, we can't get into it anymore, even though talking basketball with James and Eric has been fantastic. You've been listening to Almighty Baller Radio on Dash. That's whether you, well, first, if you're listening on my podcast, thank you. And you should go to dashradio.com/Almighty Baller. So that's where you'll find us. And if you wanted to listen to this live, that's how you could do it. And if you want to follow Eric and James, which you do, you can follow James on Twitter at @SnottyDrippin. And Eric, you normally don't co-host recaps with me, so I don't know your handle off the top of my head. But
at Eric Pincus.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And yeah. It's P-E-R-I-C-P-I-N-C-U-S.
All right, that's Eric Pincus. So, and again, you can find him you can find him anywhere where you can listen to great basketball or and read great basketball.
You just look at search for the reporter Doc Rivers yelled at.
I looked that up earlier. And so from here, I have a little bit more work to do tonight, and I want to find that clip of that shot with JJ, you know, where, speaking of the whole Doc Rivers yelling thing, I'm going to go find that for you.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm compiling a list. Like I said, the first thing he said was get me 29 other coaches and get their opinion. You knew that, like, immediately. I'm like, all right, well, it's going to take probably, like, you know, till next season, but you know I'm coming back with that at some point.
Did you tell him that?
No, I haven't had a chance to talk to Doc, and I'm not going to shoot arounds and practices because, you know, my coverage is elsewhere.
Oh,
no, I just don't cover the Clippers like I cover other teams. You know, it's just I cover the Lakers and I cover the economics and I cover a little bit of Clippers. So
yeah,
but you know, like I said, I have tremendous respect for Doc. I think the way he handled the Sterling crisis was
graceful, that was incredible.
And really he was a tremendous leader through a really difficult storm. And he's done a really great job on a lot of fronts. But, you know, the Clippers haven't gotten past a certain point, and it looks like they're not going to get past that point again.
Yeah, well,
We didn't even get to talk Russ or the games or anything, man.
Yeah, but we knew that. If we have the Hollywood Hoops guy on the show, except for Josh, shout out him again, then we have to talk about Hollywood Hoops.
I know, dude, but Russ just averaged like 37 and 12 and 12 for a series. Come on.
But Russ is overrated pick. And a bad basketball player.
Eric, that's why you're my guy. That's why you're my guy, Eric.
I love what Harden did this year, and I'm not mad at anyone who voted for Harden. I'm not. I can't be mad at them for voting for what Harden did. But if you ask me, I'm going Westbrook.
Good night. Good night, everyone. We gotta
Eric,
go.
We're Eric, gonna Eric, I have a question, Eric. I have a question. Can we be best friends?
Absolutely. I'm
I thought I was your best friend.
I hate you, Chris.
I knew you were going to do this. See, Eric, this is what I mean. This is what I mean with the old married couple thing. James and I, you know, we fight sometimes, but I know deep down.
Yeah. No, no, couples like each other. I can't. I only come on here for the
couples.
For the,
I, you know, I know a lot of married couples who don't like each other.
Yeah, we're not live anymore.
I got lucky, but a lot of people don't like each other.
Let me tell you. I come on for the pub, and that's the only reason I come on. I come on just to get airtime so people can hear my stupid voice.
That's disrespectful, James. I thought we had something tender.
You're the only tender thing here.